This episode is brought to you by Wisetail. Ever wonder how winning brands like Shake Shack, Chopped, and Torchy's Tacos scale their business and train employees, all while delivering an exceptional customer experience? They do it with Wisetail. Learn more at wisetail.com.
Perhaps inspired by the advent of the Wendy's salad bar in the 80s, the move to combine healthy quality ingredients with the speed and mobility of QSR has been exploding in recent years. In light of the pandemic, the fast casual movement is only going up. Long before we closed our dining rooms, many chefs had opened fast casual concepts as a way to increase their revenue stream and ease growth expansion versus the weighing costs associated with full service casual and traditional fine dining. There are obvious drawbacks to fast casual, like the need for a dialed-down menu, different style of service experience, and piles on piles of to-go containers. So how do the numbers really stack up? Should it be a part of every chef entrepreneur's journey to operate a fast casual restaurant in addition to a fine dining concept? And if the numbers are so great, why do we have anything else?
So to answer those questions, plus lots more, we have our friend, Chef Inat Admani, today on the show with us. I'm so excited to have her here. And if only it were that easy, Inat is the chef and owner of Bella Busta in New York City and Taim, which has 6 locations and growing. And we've been enjoying Inat's food for years. It's easy to see why your food has grown from small spots in the West Village in Alita to a full-fledged restaurant group. So welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi. Hi, guys. I'm good. Considering keeping myself extremely optimistic
And busy, and you're keeping yourself busy.
Yeah, but this is some. I took the 3 months. I just did nothing. I grow vegetable for 3 months, so I took some off that changed a lot of perspective in my life and. I lost 20 pounds, which is
congrats.
Congrats. Did you personally take off, or you closed the restaurants for those?
We've been closed for 3 months, from March to around July. I opened a little bit, but until July, we were, you know. So I had a time to just learn my kid's name. It's Liam and Pika. and fall in love with my husband again and lost the weight I want to and grow vegetable and other great stuff. and it was a perfect 3 months. So, and now I'm back.
And now you're back. So you closed Bella Busta for the 3 months. Did you also close the Taim restaurant?
No, Taim was still operating and Stefan would back a few, he started back in May already, like few days. I decided to stay safe and stay behind with my kids upstate. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so Taim opened just several locations, not all of them. So some of the location were open, some would make no sense to keep them open. So yeah.
So now all 6 are back open again, and you even have a new one.
We have one new. We just opened in Dupont Circle in DC, and we're opening now in Long Island City.
Oh, congrats.
So, yeah, and the company looking to expand and continue, and I think.
Were those in the works before the pandemic? Or?
Exactly. So Dupont Circle and Long Island City, already we've been talking. We had deal with the airport that we were talking about, and it was, but you know, now certain things was just like cut down a bit and just old and postponed some of the stuff, so we'll see. I think we will be fine in very short time. We're still like thriving, changing menus. I just put new dishes, new bowls, we have new soup, so we're trying to stay attractive and delicious.
Well, your food is always delicious, so I don't imagine that being a problem.
Thank you.
You started out by saying you're optimistic. Tell me what fuels that optimism.
it's worked for me much better than
more successful than pessimism, right? Yeah.
No, I'm not always successful. I failed a lot. Like, you know, if you look at my Instagram, everything gonna look everything is awesome, you know. But if like my life is it's tough, it's super hard. And two kids that one in Zoom, none, so things are not easy, and I failed with financial the last few years, and I was struggle with Kishkash, and a few restaurants that closed. And still, I think it's like, I still think this is would be great. And I think that time would come that I can translate, I don't know, success is a big word, but everything I do, I can translate to, you know, more, I don't know, financial stabilize, I would say.
Why do you think that Taim has been such a success and perhaps easier to grow? Or
it's easier. It's easy to grow. Nothing is easy to grow. There's always pain. It's always
it sounds painful. Like your vegetables are easy to grow, though. I don't know. No,
you should see my marijuana plant. It's insane.
That's why you're so optimistic.
That's why you're so optimistic.
You think I'm always stoned? I'm not stoned now. It's the way. But no, I tell you what, the funny, we talk, we were mentioned about before about the fine dining and casual, not casual, like fast food and fast casual. And it's very interesting because I was working all my 20s and my early 30s, I was working in all fine dining. All the restaurant I chose, it was like the top notch. If it was in Israel for the first 2 years, and then I came here in 99, and the first restaurant I owned was a tiny 5-seat falafel place. So just imagine how my Israeli colleagues was make fun of me of after all these years of working for the top notch chef, then I open a falafel place. But it's interesting what's happened, because in a crash in 2008, when all my colleagues that have fine dining restaurant was extremely struggling and closing restaurant, Taim was doing, it was the best year of Taim.
Right.
And then, and I think that was the breaking point for a lot of chefs, even chefs that never thought they're going to do, you know, fast casual, because it's like, it's demeaning for them, like doing fast casual for somebody that always did, you know, a Michelin star restaurant. It's hard. For the ego, I mean. It's not hard, actually. It's pretty easy. But it's really hard if you come from that world. And everything is start changing. People that look at me in a different eye now, like, oh, my God, she was genius. I kind of the first, I cannot say I'm first, but, like, I'm really somebody that come from very high-end fine dining and decide the first restaurant I had. And then I moved to Balabusta, and then we had other ventures and other stuff. But, like, and I'm really happy, you know. Back in the days, I was like, "Oh my God, did I just open falafel?" It was shocking for me, and I think it was a change, probably changed my life having to him.
Totally. I mean, it's, and I think that's a good outlook to have. But it also changes how consumers perceive fast casual. I think that's what's also changed over the past, what, you opened the first time 14 years ago? How long ago was that?
2005. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I think also consumers' perception of what they expect from fast casual has changed a lot. Like the fact that, you know, well-regarded chefs with pedigree are putting thought and love into the ingredients and what they're presenting at a fast casual level has really fundamentally shifted how people eat. And I think
absolutely, it's accessible for people. It's easier. Mm-hmm. They can afford that. They can eat at a fast casual much more than they eat in more, you know. So
have you seen how have sales been, you know, during this time for your time? Have they stayed pretty much like where they were? Have you seen some locations do better than others? And why do you think that is?
Of course, there is location like a financial district. So right now, when financial district is what's built on a lot of offices and people that come to work, not a lot of residential. We just opened it a few weeks ago, and we really want to try and see how we can promote that area and all that. But this is a tough tough area. This is not an easy one. And of course, we Taim did much less than they do in pre-COVID, obviously. So a lot of things, help. We were feeding a lot of hospitals and frontline workers, and I think that was helping to stay around and continue. Of course, a lot of company got the PPP that help for some, but it's definitely, even Taim that doing considerably good, it's still not as great as we did before. So we need to exactly like everybody else, we need to reinvent ourselves and thinking better how we can create the menu more easy, keep a price as, you know, not too high. Like there is a lot of like fat in consideration right now.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And I know, I mean, I know last year, like we talked and you were planning to really scale Taim. You guys had a lot of new locations planned for 2020. How are you guys reassessing, or you're just pushing further into the future? Or you know,
we do, but we need to be more careful. So that's the thing. We have to be a little bit more careful. There is location, like we had a deal with the airport, for example, and then in potential for a second one in a different airport. But this is something that have to postpone. This is something that have to wait. Like there is not much going on in the airport right now.
Yeah.
So like all this kind of
airport, yeah.
Yeah. So right now we're holding that for hoping that things get better in the next 6 months, and then we're gonna get back on that deal. But there is a lot of things like that. I think what a lot of people looking right now is opening in underserved community, which that's what I said for 10 years now. That's what I want to do. I think New York was so tough even before COVID, and now it's almost impossible to stay afloat. So I think I see chefs that getting smart and doing stuff elsewhere and trying to open places, you know, in like town that there is no much, and people like really get excited by you having something new and delicious. So,
speaking of leaving town, how is the new shop in DC and DuPont Circle doing?
Pretty good, I have to say. So, Long Island City is not open yet, but it will be open very soon, and DuPont doing, you know, I've been in DuPont like maybe 8 months ago, and it was so vibrant, and I was like, okay, I love this location, this is great. And then I've been for the opening like around 5 weeks ago, and it's like dead, right? You barely see people walking in the street. It's kind of like, oh.
But that's because there's I don't know if you heard, but there's a massive COVID outbreak in the middle of Washington.
What is that? Like a flu, no? Like a flu from China, no?
There was a super spreader event last week at the Rose Garden. No,
I heard I can just drink few bottle of booze and I'm going to be fine. I will try that later.
Yeah, right. So DuPont Circle now seems quiet.
Quiet, but I think we're doing considerably to the situation. I think we're doing fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you guys considering looking at some of these other markets that maybe, you know, like are less competitive than say like New York City, and where would they be?
Yeah. I think we're going to look for Miami. I think that's a next market. So we're probably going to expand a little bit more in DC when we're already there and we have the structure for, you know, for that market. We have the employees, we have the management team. So I think that's what's going to happen. And then right after, I think Miami would be next.
Are you saying that because you want to be there for the winter? You're like, Miami's next.
Exactly. I want to be anywhere in the winter. I want to be anywhere in the winter. You know, I'm coming from the desert, if you remember.
I know. What are you looking for? Like, you talk a little bit about DC, like having some infrastructure there, so being easy to expand. But what else, like when you're thinking of expanding Taim into new markets, what are you looking for in those markets?
I don't know. You know, Taim now it's a little bit different than how we started, Stefan and myself, working on a counter. I'm doing the sandwiches, and he's nice to customer, and we both there, and we are 2 months old, and just sitting there in a crate, you know, like it's strange. We have a CEO, we have a board member, you know, so a lot of the decision is not just, obviously, it's not just my decision, but when right now the company looking for a space, it's not anymore just a not guts and intuition, like it's right. Used to be, which were working for us for a while, but not always. Right now we go into a location and check the lunch, the morning, we count in the people that passing in a street. There is like a whole research. It's not just like, okay, this is look like a great location, I think we're going to go for it. That's what I used to do back then. Now there is a lot of like statistic and demographic research, and how many buildings they build in the next 5 years, how many residents, you know, it's everything. Even then, this is the funny thing. I really rather to go on my intuition and guts. Even you do all the research in the world, sometimes it's just not working, you know? And sometimes
Especially so now, I feel like because of the pandemic, everything is in flux and, you know, business neighborhoods are emptied out, and who knows if people are going to continue to work from home. And if they work from home, then you should be in residential neighborhoods. If they don't, then right.
So I know. And a lot of people left town, especially in New York, you know, it's like a lot of people. I know from Balabusta that it's super neighborhood. It's, you know, I know that the West Village, like a lot of my customer now in the Hamptons, and they stay there because if the kids doing Zoom, they have no reason to get back.
Yeah. So tell us, let's talk a little bit about Balabusta, because you know, you also have, you know, this amazing restaurant that people love. We were actually, I know you're in the West Village now. We personally are very pissed when you left Nolita, because we loved Balabusta. We used to go there like once a week, but I know, but
Nolita changed. Nolita, I know, it did change. When I opened, I love Nolita. Taim is still there. So, but when I opened Balabusta in Nolita, on the street was very, it was Ruby across us that been there much before us. And then Torici opened 3 months after me, and that was the only restaurant on that block. And forget about Israeli restaurant around. I was the only one in the whole area. It was another like a hummus place on Kenmore or something like that. But there is nothing. 7 years after, or 6 years after I opened Balabusta, it was 8 Israeli restaurants in a radius of 3 blocks, you know? So, wow. And I know I'm probably the best.
I know, you're like the Israeli Pied Piper.
Yeah. No, I don't know the best. I'm not like that as much as, no, it's not like, I grew up, it's a lot of American that open, oh, this is a trend now, let's do Israeli or Middle Eastern cuisine. And for me, it's like, it doesn't matter if I'm great or better than others. It's still, people will want to try other places. It's going to take time, you know, like there is the competition. It just like make no sense together with the rise of the rent. That's what just like, I couldn't hold it anymore.
Do you feel like your customers at Taim are coming into Balabusta? Are they making that connection?
Yeah, that's something I'm working for years. How we make that connection? How I want my customer to understand I have Balabusta. I want my best, because a lot of time they don't know, oh my God, that's the same owners. A lot of time. And this is all about like dealing with branding and social media, and always have this connection to people because it's important. And we're working on that. But I think most people in New York knows. And actually moving Balabusta to the West Village was a very smart move. I'm very happy I did it. Because since we opened Balabusta there, we were packed every day. And the last 2 years of Balabusta in Nolita was very tough. Very, very tough. So over there, it's like, because there is not a lot of this kind of cuisine, because people want Balabusta to be back after we close. And I think maybe a few other reasons, Balabusta always been also destination, not just a neighborhood joint. I think it would be easy to get people from Upper West Side going down, and you know, like all around the city. Right. And we did we do good. Even now, we do fine, you know.
So you reopened in July with all outside at Bella Busta.
So we did open outdoor. It's a little bit tricky in our location because we couldn't do, you know, I have friends that have more dining out than they ever had inside, which is great. So right now they have 70 seats outside, which they have 35 inside before. And that's big different for several months when the people can sit outside. For us, we have 70 seats, 73 or 4 seats inside, and we could only do 18, which is a huge cut down for us. So it's a little bit, but we did fine. We're trying to promote some Jewish holidays from there. So we did a Rosh Hashanah delivery package that did so well. We sold out. We couldn't even continue. And we did some Yom Kippur and some, and we're going to do like kind of like Shabbat dinner that I like and like things like that. Then Thanksgiving maybe and other holidays. And the hardest part, and I saw a lot of other chefs trying to do, is when you have a kind of a casual dining restaurant like Bella Busta, and I think the world is going direction to delivery, how you translate that? How you start getting people to understand that you should get food from here? And it's super hard. And when I reopen, I change the whole menu. There is one dish from old Bella Busta there, which is the fried olives, which I felt like I have to get. Keep, but like everything I did, like kind of a delivery menu. So some people was kind of bummed when they come to dine in and the food is not as fancy and nice as used to be, because I need the food that only two cooks can create and manage. Right. I can't have another 5 cooks in the kitchen, you know, impossible. So the food changed a lot. Now I'm going to change it back because I'm, of course, I get bored very fast and I want to have better food. But we're trying to kind of, you know, put kind of in the conscious of people that we do delivery. We did pantry line, you know, granola, amazing tahini, like ratahini and preserved lemon and harissa, all the stuff that people always ask me, all the sauces, a lot of dry stuff. So we do, that is not... People don't think as Bella Busta as, oh, I'm going to get my pantry there. And I'm going to have dinner for my whole family. It's different. We do delivery, but it's not going to keep us moving forward. You know what I mean? If that's not going to change, this is not what's going to keep us, the delivery.
This episode is brought to you by Wisetail. Ever wonder how winning brands like Shake Shack, Chopped, and Porchy's Tacos scale their business and train employees, all while delivering an exceptional customer experience? They do it with Wisetail. Wisetail is a state-of-the-art learning management system built to engage and empower your workforce. With a modern user interface and intuitive course authoring capabilities, Wisetail has helped hundreds of businesses achieve their growth goals. Plus, Wisetail has experts on call to help you bring your vision to life with their world-class client success team. Come see how Wisetail's award-winning training platform can go to work for you. As a special offer, HRN listeners are eligible for their first month free. Learn more at wisetail.com/HRN. That's wisetail.com/HRN. wisetail.com/HRN. Terms and conditions apply. Visit their website for more details.
Welcome to Jupiter's Almanac. I'm Matthew Rayford, the great-great-great-grandson of Jupiter Gilliard, a former slave who bought the land I now farm in Georgia nearly 150 years ago. Through the years, my ancestors have passed on some essential and hard-earned wisdom about growing and producing the food we eat. It's my great honor to share that inheritance and to invite other farmers from Georgia and around the country to share their tips with you.
It's an opportunity for us to slow down and to connect and to plug in. And the farm does that in a way that lets you connect and appreciate the life that exists and nurture and cultivate that, and then extend that to the relationships, to the people who are in that house with you and your community.
So if you are just starting out, reconnecting with the land, or a seasoned farmer, join the conversation.
And to be honest with you, it was like, would Warren come out and say, hey, I want to be a farmer? Probably not. I consider myself a city kid. You know, when we initially got a horse, you know, I have that New York City mindset. A horse, I'm thinking thoroughbred horse, aqueduct racetrack, Belmont racetrack, those type of things. You know, and slowly but surely, I'm starting to understand a lot more.
I do remember early on, like, you know, the first month or two of dating, how we would daydream about starting a farm together. And it's kind of like, hold on, let's like pump the brakes and get to know each other first and then talk about that, you know?
So what got me into chickens? I always joke and say that a chicken saved my life, and it very much so did.
I'm interested in Black liberation that's ecological and that's not contingent upon these systems giving us anything. There's also something that's beyond this that I want and that I seek for our people, and that's intimacy with the land, and that's reliability.
And so for us, it's also this idea of connecting people back to the land and connecting our folks back to their ancestry. So what does it mean to organically, sustainably farm in our current economy and time?
Please subscribe to Jupiter's Almanac wherever you get your podcasts.
It's tough. I mean, I think a lot of people change their business model, but I think people, like, we're sick of eating at home. I'm done. I'm over it. I'm like ready to go to restaurants and have somebody else like make me a nice plate. No. Food. Are you starting to see that return at all, especially with like 25% dining?
Yes, yes. This weekend was great for us. We were looking at the numbers from upstate, and we were so happy, Stefan and myself, like, okay. But it's still, you know, it's in one weekend that was have people could actually sit out and in. What's, you know, we have that question, what's going to happen in 1 month? What's going to happen if the numbers of infected people are going to be higher and they close the restaurant again? What's, you know, this is all like kind of vague prediction. We don't know what's going to happen. So it's super hard to plan too many things. This is the uncertainties, I think, what is the harder things for everyone right now.
Yeah. Ugh.
Oh, you're busy.
I know. I don't know why people keep calling. And my our production assistant like had to run out. So you normally he would keep everything spaced. And of course, it's like the buzzer is going to be next. And be like 25 people trying to come try on clothes in a minute. Just kidding. I mean, I think the speaking of uncertainty, I mean, we had Jason from Bathhouse on a couple episodes ago. And he was like, basically, everybody just has to get comfortable with being uncertain and uncomfortable. Because that's the only way to operate, you know.
Yeah,
for
you can
full
say
service
that,
restaurants.
Though. Tell Jason, that my husband, I can feel comfortable because I really, my mind, since I'm very young, I did so many shit in my life that my mind, what's the worst can happen? You die. Okay, we're all going to die. It's always been like that. What the worst can happen? You would die. That's the worst can happen. And okay, my kids would be bummed, but now I brought a dog, they would be fine. So what's the worst? What's the worst can happen? And, but tell that to somebody like my dear husband with a little bit more anxiety and fears and said, feel comfortable with uncertainty. He's never going to feel comfortable when he don't know if he can support his family, if he can put kids in school, if what's going to happen when they need college. It's easy to say for people maybe that don't have kids. I think it's a little bit easier because you don't have that responsibility. And for people that don't have any, that the mental stability, you know, they're more like, I don't know.
I think the challenge here is that you're used to, you know, especially New Yorkers, you're used to this idea to continue to grow, to get better, to get bigger, to spread out your business and, right now is a really hard time to sort of plan
how
you're going to grow your business.
I know it's weird to say now, and maybe I shouldn't say that, but if I would go backwards, I wouldn't grow Tame. I would stay with two locations, and I would be the happiest woman in the world.
Really?
I'm telling you now. And I tell that to people. They ask me, I want to grow to them. Like, that's what I want. When I opened Taim, I said Taim would be in every airport, every city, all around the world. This is amazing falafel that everybody should try. And I always had big dream. I'm going to look back now, and I can tell you, if I would go back and would stay with even my one Taim in the West Village, made us enough cash back then to live very comfortably. So,
can you tell us why? Is it just the stress of all the places, the responsibility, the partners? I mean, obviously, you probably can't call your partners out, but tell us some of the things that add, you know, make you feel that way.
When you grow, you take people, you don't have all the decision, which is hard because we build this company. So there is a lot in things on stake. But the other things that when you grow, you're not going to see the same money as, you know, that's the things. The company is in a growth mode. So right now, nobody take distribution and nobody just everything getting inside the company. So right. Basically, I used to feel very comfortable. Let's say it's not a situation now. So
No, I was going to say, but you're going to continue to grow and then, like, you know, you'll be able to be at your...
And then I would be rich. More.
Yeah. And then you'll be rich. Just give it 5 years. Just give it 5 years
and
after
then,
the growth
but,
mode.
But at the same time, I'm looking, I'm 49. I'm not a spring chicken anymore. I
you're
hate that word. But
chicken.
I know. My vibe. Yes. But I'm still, I'm 49 and I'm going to be 50 next year. And... it's not like I don't have many years to enjoy, but it's still, you know, I want to things different, right? I want to be financially in a different place would be nice right now.
Would you do Bella Booster again? Would you do fine dining? Would you go back and do that?
I have dream. This is not a dream for now, but I have a dream for years to do one day fine dining, like real thing. I got some offer with a big hotel in a city. I can't talk about it, but I hope it's going to happen because that's going to give me every dream I ever wanted, like every equipment I ever wanted and couldn't afford in my kitchen, the space, the leverage to do all the food I think I can do but couldn't so far. So, yes, I have that things, and I have a million ideas about fast casual, but I'm not going to do more fast casual. I'm going to grow Taim. And I don't know, restaurant business now for a lot of my friends and colleagues, it's kind of like they put a pause on it, you know, they're like, okay, we're waiting now. Nobody can think forward much ahead, you know, like, I think that's the main things. Oh, I want to do that. But this is, and some people say this is the best time because you get the best deals and the rent,
yeah.
But it's still not the best time because the customers are not going to come yet. So yes, you're going to get the best deals and a great restaurant with all the equipment of people that was about to open and couldn't continue. Yeah. But at the same time,
you don't know where to be too.
What do you mean?
I feel like you don't know the neighborhoods at the moment. I mean, especially in New York, I feel like it's hard to tell
tell you the truth. I don't have any faith in the city anymore. I'm telling you the honest,
don't
I know
that. Don't say that. New York always comes back.
I know, but okay. You know, you're in the industry in a very different side, which is the best side ever.
Maybe our customers are all struggling though. So we're struggling, you know, so like we feel the pain.
I know,
too, like.
But okay. How many people you know that make money from restaurant in New York? How many? I don't.
Yeah,
I don't. And I'm talking about big people. I'm talking about people that have a huge platform on a food network, you know, this big celebrity chef and people that have tons of social media and branding and PR behind them and names and James Beard and all that bullshit. They don't make money. They make money. The money's not coming from restaurant anymore. The money I'm making right now is coming from event, from social media, from like Zoom classes and all kind of collaboration. I'm telling you the truth.
This is a trend before the pandemic.
It's not a trend. It's chefs that realize that, okay, maybe it's what I do. You know how much I used to hate social media? I thought it's the most demeaning, the most disgusting, how people even go on Instagram and check out. Like, it was like, and then I realized, first, I enjoy it now, yeah?
Yeah.
I kind of enjoy it.
I love your account. You're so fun to follow.
I really enjoy. I realized there is no choice. So I need to go with the flow and I need to kind of find out how to stay as real as I can without all the bullshit, you know? But I'm telling you, that changed my life. Because it's funny, you know, when they're coming to you for a chef for collaboration, they check first how many followers you have in each platform. It's ridiculous, but that's what it is.
I mean, it's true. People have been complaining. It is true that chefs and restaurateurs have been complaining about the margins for years. It's like rent has gotten more expensive, price of ingredients has gotten more expensive, but like consumers' willingness.
What about payroll? Got to 40, 42. I used to stay with payroll back in the days on 20 something. My food costs always been great, you know. As a Jewish woman with a Persian mom and Yemeni dad, I know how to not have waste in food. That's my biggest strength ever. So I never have a problem. But payroll, it's like, you can pay less than $18.20 for a cook these days, which in Miami, they pay $8
an hour. No.
But you
also want the cooks to make money too. I mean, it's a challenge. I mean, I think the thing is that customers have to get more willing to pay for food. It's this delicate balance. Do you think that the pandemic will shift how customers perceive like the privilege of dining out and the value of dining out and be more willing to pay?
I don't know. People are still shit. A lot of them. No, seriously, we have a
woman. You started out so optimistic, Anna.
I am, but listen, I'm interacting with a lot of people. I'm optimistic. They will get better. That's what I'm optimistic. They should, but they will get better. The thing
is, believe in you, people.
The first day I opened Balabusta, the first day after all this time and months of like silent, and we open and we excited, and a woman, the first day we just opened, she wrote a bad review on Yelp that the portion was too small or something was, and I was like, are you serious? First, I don't understand that culture. Like, call the restaurant, we will fix it. You're not helping anyone just to trust the restaurant and ruin our reputation. Why people do that? Like, this is another thing. So this day we open, yeah?
Yeah.
So,
I know.
So I don't know about people. Yes, they get excited to get out, but they still, a lot of people feel entitled and feel like they should get, you know, and it's not like that anymore. Restaurant need to do what they need to do to stay survive. And I changed the menu, so it's not exactly the Balabusta menu. And yeah.
It's tough. I mean, we were like, we had a casual lunch out over the weekend and we saw like this guy getting like kind of like snippy, like rude with the server because there wasn't salt and pepper like immediately delivered to him. I'm like, first of all, who wants to have like shared salt and pepper shakers on the table right now? Like I'm like, just be nice, people. Just be nice. Like you got to just let go of the things that you
But used people to be. I know, but people are very stressed and there is a lot of things going on and yes. Not that I justified any assholes that read back to wait stuff. Not ever.
Yeah. Crazy times. Well, we appreciate the optimism that you shared with us for the start. So what's your outlook for the future? You feeling like, you know, this will pass?
Oh, and future is holding a lot of amazing stuff. I'm trying to keep busy. I always, the minute I feel like in movement, you know, I think it's super important. And as much I enjoy my time upstate, I grow like probably 50 something different vegetable all this time. I learned so much about, you know, agriculture, I would say a little, and But I try to keep myself active. I'm writing the third book now. It would be a memoir. Thanks. And I'm trying to, I don't know, not sleepy, stay active.
Yeah. All right. Well, you probably need a new jumpsuit since you've lost 20 pounds. So we'll take care
of that. I
know.
That's exactly, you read my mind. That's what the whole conversation, that's the first things I want to say, by the way. Oh,
we
my
got God.
Oh, my jumpsuit, that's so big. It's great. No, it's still looking great.
I'm sure.
It's like so big. That was so tight. And now it's like just like perfect. Funny.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, we always love catching up with you, and so happy to have you on the show finally. And
I know. I'm sorry for my flakiness.
No, it's you're
usually like that. No, seriously. It's not me usually. It's just, yeah.
Don't worry. It was bad cell phone reception. It's not your fault. Anyway, so we like to shout out opening soon announcements. If there's anybody who just maybe recently reopened, or you know of anybody opening soon, anybody you want to shout out?
Who's opening? Wow, I'm so not involved with what's happening in the industry right now.
Well, Long Island City. When is Long Island City open?
Steph, when is Long Island City open? Okay, we don't, doesn't know yet.
All right, well,
soon.
Yeah. And Miami, 2020, December 2020, so we can all go out to
don't say Miami. but like DuPont just opened.
DuPont, right.
I'm trying to think about not me, but my friend.
Yeah.
Who is opening now? There is any opening restaurant right now?
I have a couple. So we have, I know, there are some. So Cora, the team from Edward Lee and Kevin Ashworth from Kentucky now are opening Cora in Cincinnati next week, which is super exciting. It's all focused
on
like
ancient
grain.
We're going to Cincinnati now.
I don't know. Some of our listeners are all over the country. You talked about how like other smaller markets are doing really well. Like,
you're right.
There you go. Maybe you should go to
Cincinnati. People in Cincinnati are going to Cincinnati.
You think with my skin color? I'm not sure. Okay. I have Ong Tai Mi that doing a pop-up next door to Balabusta. I don't know when she starts. I think in December.
Who is it?
Sorry. You know it? You know her? Hong, H-O-N-G. She's doing Thai food. Tai Mi.
Cool.
That's a last name. Yeah. She's very good cook. She used to have a few restaurants called Tai Mi. She have several. She closed all of them. And now she's bringing a food for where used to be La Ventura, next door to Balabusta. I'm very excited about that. So that's, I know she's going to do 6 months pop-up.
6 months. I mean, pop-ups are like the new hot thing. Everybody is doing pop-ups, which has been very cool to see.
It makes sense at this time. Because there is so many restaurants and owners that said, what I'm going to do with this place? And now, okay, so they have somebody to rent it for a little for one, you know. Yeah. It makes sense.
For sure. Yeah. We actually have two people who have been doing a lot of pop-ups lately who will be on the show later. So Ursula just opened also in Crown Heights from Eric and Lonnie Holiday. And Lonnie will be on the show in a couple weeks. They're doing New Mexican food, which is super cool. But yeah, and then anybody who, there's also some fun events going on. There's RAD, which is Restaurants Advocating for Democracy, and they're doing a pop-up series every Thursday night with different restaurants.
What is democracy?
Right. What is democracy? Well, apparently it's not the Electoral College. But yeah, that's a whole other show. But yeah, so that's, they have,
I don't want to be in that show.
I know. I hear you. Anyways, Al, you want to wrap us? Oh, go ahead.
No. I'm joking.
Sure. Yeah, thanks again, Anat, for chatting with us. And I'm sorry we couldn't do our first show topic, but I'm glad we got to stick with this one. We'll put a wrap up of our show on tillitnyc.com, so you can check our podcast blog there. We'll also send one in your inbox. So if you're not on our email list, then please do that now. Anat, I know you're a big fan of social media, so please tell everybody where they can follow you.
I will. Yes, Chef Anat. Chef Anat. Yes, that's it, right? Anything else? Chef Anat. Yeah.
Well, Balabusta has its own account too, right? And Taim does.
Taim. Taim Falafel, and then we have Balabusta NYC. Yeah.
Cool. And then you can follow us at We Are Opening Soon and at Till at NYC. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Opening Soon is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You could also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.